This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 20th of December 2013. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the last Winchester and District Talking Newspaper of 2013. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 20th of December 2013, which this week have been edited by Christine Aston and Fredina Hearn. And your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Taff.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. The three headline stories this week are Schoolboy Killed in Skiing Avalanche, Santa Rides In to Cheer Poorly Children, and £134,000 payout for just a £1 bet. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please? Claire.
Thank you. Schoolboy Killed in Skiing Avalanche. A Winchester teenager has been killed in an avalanche while on a skiing holiday with his twin brother and father in Austria. The 16-year-old schoolboy was skiing off-piste in the exclusive resort of Lech an Arlberg when he was buried in an avalanche with his father and a local ski instructor. His twin brother escaped unhurt because he was slightly behind the others, but he was left looking on as the three were swept away. The family are from Winchester, but their names had not been revealed at the time the Hampshire Chronicle went to press, as relatives had not been informed. The boy's father, who was 51, was pulled from the snow alive, but with serious injuries, while the ski instructor suffered slight injuries. Local police said that the route which the group had been taking when they were struck was not an authorised one, and confirmed that the ski instructor was being investigated on charges of negligence leading to serious injury with fatal consequences. The tragedy happened in the same place where Dutch Prince Friso was buried in an avalanche while skiing off-piste with a local ski guide. He was dug free and remained in a coma until he died. The accident happened on Tuesday at 1:24 p.m. when a ridge of snow fell while a group of four were heading to Stierlochbach. Rescuers said that the father and son had both been equipped with avalanche airbags that had activated as they were covered by the mass of snow, but the devices failed to prevent them from being buried. The ski instructor, who was able to free himself, made an emergency call before starting to look with the surviving son for the two still buried. The father of the twins was pulled from the snow with serious injuries and was taken to hospital by air ambulance, but the teenage boy was declared dead at the scene. A police spokesman said, "The route they were on was, according to our information, not authorised. It was not allowed to go there, and the ski instructor that was responsible for the group and had an obligation not to take risks is under investigation." Three helicopters were called out to transport rescuers to the scene. When the accident happened, the region had issued only a Category 1 avalanche warning, meaning there was a very low risk of an avalanche. However, experts from the Avalanche Warning Service in Vorarlberg said the Category 1 warning was deceptive and could still mean sudden avalanches. The coroner's office in Winchester had not been informed of the death at the time of going to press.
And the story behind the second front page headline, please, Robin.
Santa Rides In to Cheer Poorly Children. 26 children received some early Christmas presents from kind-hearted scooter enthusiasts. Members of the Due South Club dressed up as Father Christmas, a reindeer, an elf and Scooby-Doo as they visited Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. They gave presents to children on the Northbrook ward as part of a long-standing link between the Eastleigh Base Club and the hospital. They also handed over a cheque for £1,000 from themselves and the Hampshire Reprobates Club, which will go towards the hospital's magic wand appeal. In the past year, they have raised more than £5,000 for the appeal, which aims to improve the hospital's facilities for children.
And the third headline story, please, Jerry.
£134,000 payout for just a £1 bet. It was the goal that helped one Winchester pensioner win the Christmas present he will never forget. As Saints frontman Jay Rodriguez struck his second-half Premier League equaliser at Newcastle, one lucky punter screamed louder than ever before. The striker slotted in after a 1-2 with Stephen Davies holding off the Magpies at St James Park, resulting in a draw. The result was one of five draws over the weekend that meant one man earned himself a six-figure payout from the bookies just in time for Christmas. The 65-year-old, who was asked not to be named, took home more than £134,000 for just a £1 bet. The windfall came after he correctly predicted the results of 15 football matches over the weekend. The unmarried man said he would be spoiling his grandnieces and nephews this Christmas after his fortunate windfall. He placed the bet at the St George's Street Coral Shop in Winchester, taking home a jackpot of £134,535.70 after accurately predicting the results of games played up and down the country. "I knew I was in the running for a bumper payout with two games to go," he said, "but then I had a nervous few minutes when Bolton came back from 2-0 down to level at 2-2. But fortunately, Wigan got the winner in that game, and then Liverpool thrashed Spurs, so I was able to enjoy the second half of that game." He added, "I've played the Coral football jackpot since the start of the season, and this is my first win. And what a win it was! The perfect early Christmas present. Top of my list will be a holiday in the sun next year." Coral spokesman David Stevens said, "We are delighted this customer has become our biggest small-staking football jackpot winner so far, and the timing couldn't be better to ensure he has a very Merry Christmas on us. It was a great effort to predict 15 correct outcomes, and he deserves his massive prize, and all for just £1.
And that concludes the headline stories. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, and finally, editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Brash, Robert Alan David Bob Brash, peacefully at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 69. Crooks, Stanley George Crooks, peacefully aged 88. Fisher, Daphne Daff Fisher, at the Royal County Hospital, aged 77. Genvy, Jack Jake Genvy, peacefully aged 92. Lambert, Dr. Glenn Lambert, suddenly aged 79. Pace, David Pace, peacefully aged 65. Purse, Alfred William Purse, peacefully at home, aged 91. Rawlings, Stanley George Rawlings, peacefully aged 95. Rouse, Eileen May Rouse, peacefully in Winchester, aged 96. Rowe, Percival John Rowe, peacefully aged 77. Tribe, Ian Powell Tribe, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 75. Watson, Betty Barbara Elizabeth Watson. And finally, Young, Eileen Betty Young, peacefully at the Cliffs, at Solent Cliffs Nursing Home, aged 89. And now it's time for Christian comment, read by Claire.
This is headed Faith, Love and Hope Are All in the Waiting. For love would be love of the wrong thing. there is yet faith, but the faith and the love and the hope are all in the waiting. So wrote T.S. Eliot, and it is appropriate to recall it as we continue in Advent. Waiting is not a modern virtue. Impatience is not only a vice of the young, but of a society where changes have to be made quickly, or the football manager is fired, the politician voted out of office, the television star demoted. Whatever the answer to what do we want, the answer to when do we want it, is always now. Yet there is a recognition in the church at this time that we are waiting, and that this is part of the history of those who follow God. The psalmist often has the cry, "How long, O God?" waiting for God to act and put right the many injustices which are in the world. We hear it in the stories of Jesus' birth. It was at this time that a man turned his back on civilized society and went out into the wilds, living a rough and ascetic life. He is called John the Baptist in the West, and in the East, John the Forerunner. He came to encourage people that their waiting was not to be forever, and there was one coming after him who was going to be the answer to their longings. So, did he tell them to hide until the person appeared, or to go out and enjoy themselves because it was not going to be very long? No, he called them to repentance. He urged them to change their behaviour and to live a more moral life. If they had power, they were not to use it to extort from others. If they had been living selfishly, they were to change their minds and to act differently. It is interesting to note that as we scroll down in the New Testament, we find a similar appeal to the early Christians who were waiting for Jesus to complete his work and were looking for a new future with new heavens and a new earth. Again, the teaching was that the way to prepare was not to sit and daydream, but to get up and act ethically. As we wait for Christmas, let our waiting not just be an expectation of the festivities of this year, but that this prayer may be fulfilled in us. May the God of peace himself sanctify you entirely, and may your spirit and soul and body be kept sound and blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus. And this was written by Terry E. Hemming.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or the editor can be written to at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. And we've got 10 letters to the editor this week. And we'll start with one read by Robin.
And the first letter this week is from Elizabeth Crawley of Winchester, with the title, "We Should Cherish These Services." It is sad and very worrying to read that Winchester City Council may bring in a financial squeeze on the Winchester Area Volunteer Action next year. This coordinating agency, founded around 25 years ago, plays a major role in running or supporting a wide range of local voluntary services, bringing help to the needy. The Volunteer Bureau at the Winchester Area Volunteer Action has a considerable impact on the community by encouraging more people to give their time, energy, and caring skills to the voluntary groups who can use their services. Volunteer Action Group needs flexibility in order to operate effectively and to pick up new challenges. It is forced to concentrate simply on existing services, or even to reduce these. It will become an agency totally dependent on the council. Many small and medium-sized voluntary agencies have no spare cash, and if their financial or other crucial support is reduced or, perish the thought, removed, they often have to close. These precious and vulnerable voluntary services need to be cherished and supported, not hampered or threatened. I speak from experience long ago in this field. Elizabeth Crawley, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
This letter comes from Guy Blythman and is entitled Hants Windmills Brought to Book. With another enthusiast for such things, I'm in the final throes of a book on the traditional windmills of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, which should be the most detailed work on the subject so far. We've got to the stage of choosing the photographs, and have found there are some we'd like to use, but appear to belong to private individuals, rather than to a museum or record office. I don't have contact details for the people concerned, and if any readers could possibly help me get in touch with them, or relations if deceased, so that we can discuss having copies made, I would be most grateful. They are Mr. Geoffrey Bridger for Oslebury Mill, Mr. Roy Peckingham, Peel Common Mill, Titchfield, in working order and derelict, Miss A. Marshall, Waterlooville Mill, after the fire, Denmead Mills, Mr. R. Joycey, debris being removed from the Tower of Langston Mill pre-conversion, Mr. Douglas Rightout, Greatley, Mr. Douglas White, Hambledon, Mr. J. Fairman, Cliddesden Wind Engine. We would also like to trace the originals of the photo of Forley or Dibden Mill and North Hailing Mill, both of which appear, like those mentioned above, in Anthony Trigg's book, The Windmills of Hampshire, 1982. Guy Blythman, 32 Lindsay Court, Govert Avenue, Shepperton, Middlesex. And there is an email address, all in lowercase, guy.blythman, that's B-L-Y-T-H-M-A-N, at talktalk.net.
Lack of slip road, gaping omission is the title of Keith Webb's letter today. It was pleasing to read Michael Radford's letter in the Chronicle December the 12th, appreciating my campaigning over so many years for improvements to the top end of Eastern Lane and its junction with the M3A34 roundabout. Unfortunately, in spite of spending so much money and causing so much disruption during construction, there remains the gaping omission of the slip road onto the A34 North, which in my view would have had the greatest impact on congestion and which I always advocated. Slip roads are tried and tested and work well at motorway junctions. When long enough to enable merging traffic to build up speed, they are most efficient. But sadly, some users fail to appreciate this and do not use their wellies enough. There is plenty of space beside the A34 North for a long enough slip road to be constructed, but my fears were alerted when, a few months ago, new curbing and a lay-by was built, just where the slip road needed to extend to. Only time will tell whether I was right and the powers that be wrong. But today, when inspecting the finished work, I saw quite a build-up of vehicles in the A34 lane in Eastern Lane at a time when the traffic was nowhere near its peak. Watch this space. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
In his letter, Roger Backhouse of Parchment Street gives the facts about Parchment Street traffic. If your correspondent, Anne Bristow, letters December the 5th, had made any investigation before rushing into print, she would have discovered the following facts about traffic flow in Parchment Street. They are: the decision to reverse the flow was taken by the City Council in January 2006, after lengthy consultation and 18 months of experimenting with the current flow patterns and with regular traffic surveys taking place. Those surveys had shown that there were, on average, more than 3,200 daily traffic movements in Parchment Street when the traffic flowed towards St George's Street. The experiment of the flow towards North Walls showed that the average daily movement over three separate periods of traffic survey averaged at just over 500 daily movements. PPG 13, the Government Planning Guidance on Traffic, states that within a town centre and other areas of mixed land uses, priority should be given to people over traffic. This was applied by the City Council and still applies. The unnecessary comment about someone of significance living in this quiet street is inaccurate. Logic and the needs of ordinary people living in a residential area were taken into account a long time ago. They still apply. There are many other solutions to the problems caused by the delays of people finding parking spaces leading to the present tailbacks. Roger Backhouse, Parchment Street, Winchester.
James Anderson writes a letter which is headed "Solar Power Low on Winter Watts." One sympathises with the councillors who had to decide on the Bishop Sutton Solar Farm near Alsford, with just 55 acres taken out of food production, being relatively out of sight, and with a limited number of objections, a refusal under planning rules was less likely. There is, though, the Department of Energy and Climate Change letter to local authorities on November the 1st, stating, "The focus of growth to be on domestic and commercial roof space and previously used land. I'm less clear on how those criteria have been applied to this site." In the same DECC letter, the Minister of State assures councillors that solar farms deliver secure energy at the lowest possible cost. It takes only a few moments to realise that solar power is a daytime-only phenomenon and yields most of its input in summer, as any sunbather will attest. Far from being secure, solar power adds not a single watt to preventing the lights going out as we reach peak demand on a winter's evening. As to cost, there are enough respected authorities, including ex-Ofgem boss Claire Spottiswood, an informed insider, who are able to spell it out. We can have low carbon at one price and beat targets, or we can spend much more on the intermittent sources of wind and solar and fail to meet targets. Councillors must have felt uncomfortable knowing that they were voting to the strictures of an unwise policy that creates unnecessary increases in electricity and shopping bills, and that on this, as on HS2, the government is being less than candid with them. James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
This letter is headed "Scandal of Public Sector Salaries." It isn't just the £28,000 pay rise for the Vice Chancellor of Winchester University that is astonishing, but her £222,000 salary. Outrageous public sector salaries are as scandalous as the greedy bankers and their absurd bonuses. This gulf between what ordinary people earn and the avaricious few is bad for our national psyche and gives the recipients the delusion that they offer something superior. I say, halve her salary and let her sing for her supper. Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
In his letter, William Kendall of Winchester says, "FOCAB has been an annual delight. Over the last 40 years, I have hugely enjoyed mingling with the thousands attending the Friends of King Alfred Buses running day and enjoyed free trips on some valiant veteran vehicles. The sheer variety of exhibits adds to the overall delight and sense of applied nostalgia which all have appreciated so much. I cannot be the only one to be horrified that this worthy annual parade should be halted by the Silver Hill development. Does anyone out there have a large empty warehouse to accommodate FOCAB's needs? It would be unthinkable for us Wintonians to jettison a 90-year-old part of our heritage. William Kendall, The Close, Winchester.
And Councillor Keith Wood, the leader of Winchester City Council, is the writer of this letter. In response to the letter, Why the Rush to Rebuild River Park, in the Chronicle, December the 5th, let me set the record straight. There is not, and never has been, any deal, secret or otherwise, with DC Leisure or their parent company to rebuild the centre. There is a contract originating in 2003 with DC Leisure to run the existing leisure centre until 2023. DC Leisure's parent company, Places for People, are a registered social landlord managing 140,000 houses across the country and undertaking a range of development and regeneration projects as part of their community building aims and objectives. We will, of course, be seeking competitive tenders for all work related to either refurbishment or rebuilding of the centre when appropriate. Councillor Keith Wood, leader, Winchester City Council, Colebrook Street, Winchester.
This is a letter from Peter Stewart. I cannot believe Hampshire County councillors are considering a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit for Chilbolton's public roads. Councillors are under a statutory duty to improve road safety. Perhaps turning the clock back has its attractions, but such romantic dreams are best left to poets, not responsible politicians. The 20 is Plenty campaign falsely claims there is research to prove 20 miles an hour speed limits improve road safety. This seriously distorts the Department of Transport figures, which show that in 20-mile-per-hour trial zones, slight accidents have fallen only in line with the national trend, while serious accidents are about 50% higher than the national trend. Councillors, do you understand the damning implications of the DFT evidence? Why have you not acted on it? Is it because you cannot believe 20-mile-an-hour limits increase serious injuries? Or are you too busy to study the evidence or unable to interpret the statistics? The speed limit was 20 miles an hour way back in 1903, when the pace of life was set by the horse-drawn cart and the grandfather clock. Those days are gone. Will you help take Britain forward into the 21st century, or will you drag us backwards into the 20th century? Peter Stewart, Beaver Drive, Bishopstoke.
This letter from Richard Ashworth, Conservative MEP for South East England, has the title Small Businesses Key to Recovery. Your readers may recall recently the government's Small Business Saturday, which underlined how important small and medium-sized enterprises are to the continued recovery of the economy. After all, if Europe's fortunes are to be revived, it is small businesses that will do the heavy lifting. I am encouraged that this government's policies are now showing some positive results. The recent Lloyds Bank Commercial Banking Regional Purchasing Managers Index shows the South East overtook London as the region with the fastest growing private sector. In fact, all 12 regions in the UK saw their economies grow. This is down to a renewed level of confidence in the economy inspired by sound and effective policies of this government. Over Christmas and the New Year, I would like to encourage people to shop locally and support small businesses in their communities. Please send me your views on the South East economy and any ideas you might have to see sustained economic growth by emailing me at richard.ashworth at europarl.europa.eu. Richard Ashworth, Conservative MEP for South East England.
And that was the last letter to the editor that we have for you for 2013. Now it's time for your say. We asked passers-by. A report this week said the tradition of tipping for service at Christmas is disappearing. Do you still tip? Jerry has the replies.
And the first one is from Bob Cole, 59, a council officer of St John Street, Winchester. In days gone by, when you used to get your milk delivered, you used to give them something little, but you don't have that consistency of service that you used to. Angela Forsyth, 48, school travel planner of Bishop's Waltham. I do tip, but only my post lady. She's very cheery, and I always get a good service from her. If you get a good service, you deserve to tip at Christmas. Tom Hanks, 50, a painter and decorator of Chandler's Ford. Well, I don't tip the milkman or the postman because I live in a flat and I never see them, but I always do tip taxi drivers. Annette Gibson, 63, retired teacher of Mews Lane, Winchester. I ceased tipping the postman when we stopped having the same one. I still leave something for the dustman because they tend to be fairly consistent.
And now we're going back through the years for our historical items. And we'll begin with one from 25 years ago, read by Claire.
This was December the 16th, 1988. Phones upgraded for poll tax calls. The telephone system at Winchester City Council is to be upgraded next year in preparation for the introduction of the new poll tax. In a report before the Policy and Resources meeting on Monday, the City Secretary said, "It is already apparent that the community charge is likely to generate between 20 and 30% more activity across office services alone." Councillors heard that the City Council's reception service was already stretched to its utmost. Mr. George Fothergill, however, took the opportunity to criticise the poll tax as the source of Winchester's problems. And the second paragraph. Further cuts to the ambulance service will put lives at risk, say Hampshire ambulance men. They warn that response times laid down by the government are already not being met, a claim denied by ambulance chiefs. Ambulance staff are concerned that the Hampshire service has overspent by £400,000 and accuse health districts of not being willing to pay for the service they demand. Ambulance staff are particularly worried about proposals to replace highly trained crews with less qualified personnel, whose job is to transport patients to day hospitals. Mr. Alec Grussart, Hampshire Branch Secretary with COHSE, says that this will reduce the number of staff and vehicles able to attend emergency calls.
And let's go back 50 years.
And there are two items from December the 21st, 1963. The first, execution held at Winchester Prison. A handful of people were outside Winchester Prison at 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning when Dennis Whitty, 22, was executed for his part in the murder of a 64-year-old Cornish farmer. Simultaneously, at Horfield Prison, Bristol, 23-year-old Russell Pascoe, the other man found guilty of the murder of William Garfield Rowe, was also hanged. The execution was the first to take place in Winchester Prison since April 1959, when Michael George Tatum, a 24-year-old Southampton cinema projectionist, was hanged for the Knobkerry murder of elderly Mr. Charles Barrett. The second item, shortly before noon yesterday, Friday, two appliances were called to a fire at Messrs. Smith Bradbeer's shop in Bell Street, Romsey, one of the town's narrow shopping thoroughfares. hundreds of people were attracted by the pall of smoke hanging over the area, where the shop was ablaze on two floors. Traffic was diverted by the police, who were controlling the crowd. Mrs. M. Wheaton, the fashion buyer, has a flat above the main premises, and her two daughters were staying with her over Christmas. They quickly evacuated the flat through a window.
And back to 100 years ago.
December the 20th, 1913. No extra money at Christmas. The fortnightly meeting of the Winchester Board of Guardians was held at the Union on Saturday. Mr. Mears moved that 1 shilling extra be given to each adult person in receipt of outrelief in the Christmas week. The board readily sanctioned extra fare for the inmates of the Union, and that being so, they could not make an exception with the outside paupers, especially at a time when the spending power of the sovereign had so greatly decreased. The chairman said that a great many of those in receipt of outrelief were better off than those who were working for their daily bread. The board divided on the motion and voted in its favour 10 and against it 15. And a second item. All humane people will rejoice to hear that at their last meeting, the Borough Council of Southampton unanimously confirmed a resolution, previously passed by their Health Committee, for preventing cruelty in slaughterhouses. The resolution passed embodied 3 new local bylaws, which provide that animals shall not be slaughtered in the sight of one another, that they shall be kept as far as possible from the sights and smells of the slaughterhouse itself, and animals without exception shall be stunned with an instrument prescribed by the council.
And finally, back 200 years ago.
On December the 20th, 1813, fighting amongst French prisoners. The disasters sustained by Bonaparte have of late caused serious altercations among the French prisoners of war confined on board the Samson prison ship in the Medway. 2 parties have arisen, one of whom assert the propriety and legality of placing the Bourbons on the throne of their ancestors, whilst the others contend for the dynasty of Bonaparte. From argument they proceeded to threats and menaces, and at last the 2 parties arranged themselves in order of battle, and last week commenced a desperate conflict. Nearly 600 men and officers who took part in the affray have been put in close confinement. And the second paragraph. A Colonel Fécamp shot himself last week at Mayence. He accompanied Bonaparte in his flight from Leipzig, and in the Battle of Hanau had both his legs shot off. On learning of the death of his only son in the same battle, he threw himself out of the litter and broke his arm. The surgeon had given him hopes of recovery, but despair at being left childless preyed upon his mind and induced him to terminate his sufferings and his life.
Robin's got first person for us now.
And first person this week is by Khalid Aziz with the title When the Frack Man Comes to Call. Cornwall, home of the pasty, clotted cream and the wind turbine. Mercifully, my view, perched atop an escarpment, looking northwest over the Atlantic, is unblemished by the sight of these giants of the modern age with their sinister whirring. Mind you, you can see why my brother-in-law, who owns some largish tracts of land in these parts, has been minded to inquire whether he might erect 10 turbines, incentivising the locals. He had the good grace to call it bribing, by supplying free electricity to the surrounding houses. However, it's an area of outstanding natural beauty, so it was soon made clear that while the local authority recognised a presumption in favour of development for alternative energy sources, there would be a world of pain awaiting anyone who wanted to have a crack in an AONB. He has shelved the idea. The figures looked dazzling. Each turbine costs £1 million to build, but the annual return in percentage terms is measured in double digits. Of course, the precise return is all dependent on how much the wind blows. Here in Cornwall, as I write, it's blowing a gale. Very seldom is there no breeze at all. In Hampshire, though, it's a different matter. Here, I should declare some interests. I am president of the Deva Society, which, pledged as it is to preserve and celebrate the Hampshire Downlands, is implacably opposed to the two wind turbine schemes at Bullington and Woodmancote. Indeed, Douglas Paterson, the estimable chairman of the Deva Society, penned a very cogent letter in last week's Hampshire Chronicle on the shaky credentials of wind energy. I should also remind you, as previously mentioned in these prints, that I have established my own green credibility by installing an array of photovoltaic cells at my offices and a biomass wood pellet boiler at home. As such, I am in receipt of the taxpayer's shilling by way of subsidy, although in the case of the home boiler, 2 years after installation, we are still awaiting regular payouts. Ed, Davy, get your finger out. So you could say, being so well balanced, I am well placed to comment on the energy scene. What really concerns me about energy policy is not the price of energy per se, although I am among the first to whinge about its ever-increasing cost, but the effect it has on the poor, and in particular the elderly poor. I do not want to read even one story this winter about a pensioner freezing or starving to death because they had to choose between heating or eating. For that reason, using taxation to increase the cost of energy while subsidising the better off cannot be right. Low carbon is a worthy ambition, but not at any cost. Cheap energy, like clean water, is a basic human right. Fracking has to be part of the mix. Those correctly opposing turbines and the green lobby need to remember that when the frack man comes to call.
Now it's time for the editorial comment,
which is headed, High Street is just one element of vibrant city. Most people would agree protecting a vibrant city centre is vital to Winchester. But is it right that the developers of the Silver Hill scheme should effectively veto a new out-of-town Marks & Spencer food store? It's hard to see how a relatively small store would impact on their giant £130 million scheme for new shops and homes being jointly developed by the City Council and Henderson Global Investors. Officers say the council has a town centre first policy for new shops, and the proposed M&S store was on the edge of the city at Eastern Lane. They argue there are better sites available, including 14 within the city centre. But M&S wanted the food store out of town so as not to compete with its main high street shop. It's right that the planning officers and the BID are determined to do all they can to promote and protect business in the city centre. The City of Winchester Trust, too, have done a great job in helping to preserve the character of one of the oldest high streets in Europe. But that shouldn't preclude businesses from wanting to boost other areas of Winchester by bringing new services and jobs to the area.
Let's find out what's on. Well, on Wednesday, January the 1st, there's the Winchester Buses Running Day from the Broadway and the bus station. It's free services by over 40 heritage buses from 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon on the routes of King Alfred's Motor Services and other former ICOL bus companies. All rides are free, but buying a £12 day programme will help in covering costs. Further information, www.focab, that's focab.org.uk. And it's pantomime season at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs to Sunday, January the 5th, various times. For details, there's a number for the box office, 01962 840 440. And at the Mayflower in Southampton, there's Robinson Crusoe and the Caribbean Pirates. That's until Sunday, January the 12th, various times again. And the box office number is 023 8071 1811. Meanwhile, at the Nuffield Theatre, Southampton, there's a Nutcracker until January the 12th. Again, various times. And again, the box office number for the Nuffield is 02380 671 771. Meanwhile, at Salisbury Playhouse, there's London Calling to Saturday, January the 18th, and Dick Whittington and His Cat to Saturday, January the 11th. Various times again, and the box office number is 01722 320 333. And finally, at the Anvil Basingstoke, there's Aladdin till Sunday, January the 5th. And the box office number for that is 01256 844 244. Well, it's nearly the shortest day of the year, so you might be interested in the lighting up times. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th of December at 8:07 a.m. and it begins at 4 p.m. And on Wednesday the 25th of December, which is Christmas Day, it ends at 8:09 a.m. and begins at 4:04 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick, there's a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Irene Dowding on telephone number 01962 870370, and she'll then send you a replacement. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. The usual warning, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, because we've had several been returned as faulty and they've simply needed to be charged up. And now we're going to continue with items of general news, beginning with one read by Claire.
These are little local things. The first one, meet friends old and new at Micheldever Lunch Club. The Club for the Elderly next meets on Wednesday, January the 8th at Northbrook Hall at 12:30 p.m. Members enjoy a two-course lunch with a glass of sherry for just £2.50. Anyone who needs help with transport can contact Tricia Patson on 01962 795028. Plans for a new pavilion at South Wanston Recreation Ground are taking shape. The Parish Council has commissioned an architect to do some initial drawings, and villagers have been invited to join a working party which met on Monday. The next stage will involve discussing the scheme with City Council planning officers in early 2014. The estimated cost is £200,000. The proposed building includes two changing rooms, toilets, community room, kitchen, and possibly a parish office. Also, South Wanston, people are to be asked for their views on a new village burial ground, allotments, affordable housing, and a tennis club. The Parish Council is canvassing locals next month with a view to getting a mandate for future new projects. Parish Clerk Debbie Found said, "The aim is to find out what amenities people would like or support before potentially going ahead with them. It follows a row over plans for a burial ground when some villagers complained that they had not been consulted."
Simply no to M&S's store bid. A bid by Marks & Spencer to build a new Simply Food store in Winnell has been rejected because there are better alternative sites in the city centre. Civic planners voted against allowing the conversion of the former Hendy Ford car dealer's base in Eastern Lane because council chiefs wanted to protect the vibrancy of the city centre. A joint £130 million scheme between the City Council and Henderson Global Investors could see the long-awaited Silver Hill development get underway in 2015, which would include new shops, homes and a bus station. In a letter, Henderson said, "The requirements of Marks and Spencer can be fully accommodated within the Silver Hill proposals, and therefore any consent to an out-of-centre location at this time would be damaging to the viability of the Silver Hill development, and in our view, to the town centre as a whole." Officers said the council has a town centre first policy for new shops, whereas the M&S plan was on the edge of the city, and that there are better sites available, including 14 within the city centre. M&S has already signed a deal with the Winnall site developer, agreeing to take it over if planning approval was granted. A spokesman for M&S said they were considering their options, but declined to comment on the setback or the possibility of future applications. Steve Opachik, the City Council's head of strategic planning, was also critical of M&S's stance during negotiations. "We have invited M&S to come and meet officers to see if there is anything we can do, but it's very clear that there is no flexibility in M&S's requirements," he said. "They want it well away from the town centre so as not to compete with their current town centre site. They also made their conditions even more stringent by saying they wanted to be near Tesco so they could pick up some of the trade from that store. A retail study in 2012 said there was a need for 9,000 square metres of additional space in the city centre up to 2031. Other potential sites for food retail development are the car parks at St Peter's Cossack Lane, Worthy Lane and the Carfax Railway Station. The M&S proposal would have seen partial demolition of the building and a revamp to create 600 square metres of sales space, a 53-space car park and dozens of jobs. Robert Moray of Marks & Spencer said it was looking to offer two separate business models in the city, one on the edge of town and one in the centre. "Please help us to grow our business in your town, invest in it and create 60 new jobs," he told city planners. But officers said the site was industrial and any new use of it would result in new jobs. Councillor Therese Evans said approving the application would be like driving a horse and carriage through the city's planning policies. She added, "Silver Hill is a multi-million pound scheme and negotiations are ongoing. We, as a community, should not be doing anything that would detract from the vibrancy of our town centre."
Defibrillators put in village phone boxes. Residents in a Hampshire village have taken first aid into their hands by installing defibrillators in their village phone boxes. The equipment, which is used to administer electric shocks to cardiac arrest patients, was set up in the remote village of Weald after the traditional red phone boxes were reconditioned by villager Terry Frost. Young people in the village raised £2,000 towards the cost of the installation and equipment, which was also funded via a £2,500 grant from rural charity Field Fair. Each defibrillator can be accessed by dialing 999 for a key code. One is in Upper Weald and the other in Lower Weald. "We bought two BT phone boxes for £1 each from BT and reconditioned them," said Parish Council Chairman Brian Collins. Tom Geddes, currently a fourth-year medical student at Bristol University, and his brothers organised the fundraising. It was a great idea, and having lived all our lives in the village, it was nice to do something for it, Tom said. And there is a picture of Terry Frost, who refurbished the phone boxes, Brian Collins, chairman of Weald Parish Council, and Tom Geddes, who organised the village fundraising, standing in front of one of the very smart telephone boxes with the defibrillator inside.
This is an advert for Diabetes UK. And it's headed, Reaching Out to Help People with Diabetes. Diabetes UK is the leading Diabetes UK charity. We care for, connect with, and campaign on behalf of all people affected by and at risk of diabetes, reaching people with diabetes in communities across the UK. Diabetes is a condition where a person can't produce insulin, or doesn't produce enough, or where their insulin doesn't work properly. If they don't have the right amount of insulin, or if it isn't doing its job properly, they can get very ill. Diabetes touches the lives of over 3 million people in the UK, and if you aren't directly affected by the condition, you probably know someone who is. Diabetes is the fastest growing health threat in the UK, and when a person has been diagnosed, it can be really difficult as they are often trying to cope both with medically and emotionally with a worrying condition that has no known cure. It is a serious, lifelong condition with potentially devastating complications such as heart disease, stroke, kidney failure, blindness, and amputation. At Diabetes UK, we are experts in diabetes, and we use our expertise to provide information and support, campaign for better treatment, and fund pioneering research. In the coming years, our work will be even more vital as the diabetes crisis worsens. In Southampton alone, 12,387 people are now thought to have diabetes, an increase of 242 people since 2012. And this is expected to rise further over the next few years. We don't receive any money from the government as we are a registered charity, so we rely on your kind donations to help us continue our work towards a future without diabetes. For more information, visit, and this is all small letters, diabetes.org.uk. Or, for local advice and support, contact Southampton and District Diabetes UK Voluntary Group by email Ingrid McIntyre, IngridMcIntyre, at yahoo.co.uk, or call 02380 404 881.
New pastors raring to go. A group of newly qualified street pastors in Hampshire celebrated graduating in style. The street pastors will now be a familiar sight every Friday evening for people living in Chandler's Ford, Hedge End, Eastleigh and Fair Oak. Their work will range from helping revellers look after themselves to lending a supportive ear and helping those in need. They completed 12 weeks of varied training every Saturday morning to gear them up to handle whatever situations arise in their pastoral duties. The 19 new pastors graduated at a ceremony with friends and relatives at St. Martin in the Wood Church in Chandler's Ford. As part of the ceremony, they were given talks by Nick Cornish from the Ascension Trust, as well as Police Inspector Lisa Stevens, Councillor Wayne Irish and Reverend Tim Searle of Chandler's Ford United Reformed Church. Good Listeners Coordinator at Chandler's Ford Street Pastors, Claire Branford, said, They are raring to go. The rotas are all made up with their names included, and we have an extra team out for New Year's Eve in Chandler's Ford. I think they will be great. They are a really good team, and they gelled well in the training, and they are all very good listeners. She added, she is glad that the pastors will be at the forefront of the community. She said, it is all about community responsibility and giving back to the community. It is good to see the church working at the centre of the community with the council and police, and it is nice to be in the middle of that circle. And the article is illustrated by a photograph of the street pastors celebrating their graduation in Chandler's Ford.
Appeal to modernise Stubbington Ark. For over 25 years, the Stubbington Ark, RSPCA Solent Branch, animal shelter in Fareham, has served the community by taking in and rehoming abandoned animals over a 400 square mile radius in Hampshire. Unlike the original Ark, however, animals do not come in two by two, but by the dozen. Domestics, exotics, farm animals and wildlife all cross the threshold of one of the largest animal shelters in the country. Last year, the shelter took in over 3,000 animals and rehomed over 2,000. Vanessa Eden, fundraising manager for the branch, said, in October, we launched our Pause for Help appeal with an initial appeal figure of £250,000 to sustain and modernise the Stubbington Ark, whilst continuing to promote awareness amongst the general public. The ongoing appeal will focus on raising funds for the overall benefit of animals in our care to sustain and improve levels of animal welfare. The first project in the Pause for Help appeal will be to rebuild the intake cattery, which houses 120 cats in separate cabins. Vanessa said, overhaul plans include a larger building and a more efficient heating and lighting system. It would also have enhanced facilities for the cats. If you want to donate, please contact 01329 666 916, or you could go to the website www.stubbingtonark, that's all one word in lowercase, .org.uk.
Benefits cap is getting people back to work. The benefits cap is working smoothly in persuading jobless Hampshire people to find work, officials have said. A total of 335 local households have had their housing benefit cut since the controversial cap came into force in the summer. They include 133 in Southampton and significant numbers in New Forest, 34, Eastleigh, 33 and Gosport, 32. The lowest number of capped households was in Fareham, 8, Winchester, 15, Test Valley, 17 and the Isle of Wight, 19. Kim Goodall, the head of welfare reform for Job Centre Plus in the South, said, it is working very well. In order to get out of the benefits cap, the best thing to do is to find employment, and we have been working hard with customers to help them do that. Often people don't understand what support they can get, whether that's training, help with writing a CV, or work experience. Lone parents may not understand that the skills they gain on a day-to-day basis, organising things and juggling tasks, can be transferred to the workplace. However, Ms. Goodall was unable to say how many of the 335 households where benefits have been capped now have somebody in a job. Across the country, 19,000 people potentially affected by the cap are now in work, but no figures are available for each local authority area. Critics of the benefits crackdown have warned of an explosion in the number of people turning up to food banks for emergency aid. But Ms. Goodall said, "We have always used food banks if appropriate, and we still do that, but there has been no significant increase in referrals." And she said claimants were reacting to the cap without anger or hostility, saying, "I have not personally heard of any reactions like that." Labour has argued for the benefits cap to be set regionally to reflect housing benefit, the bulk of most claims being so much higher in the south. It is unclear whether Ed Miliband's party would lift the cap in the likes of Hampshire to ease the pain where rents are highest, or impose an even tougher cap in the north.
Free TV licences. Many of the over 75s living in Hampshire are not taking up their free TV licences, according to TV Licensing and Independent Age. They have been reminded that anyone aged 75 or over is eligible for a free TV licence for their main address, which also covers all TV watching equipment in the property, including laptops and smartphones.
Maintaining independence and building confidence. Southampton Sight is the local society for blind and partially sighted people in the city. They provide advice and support to people in the long and short term. They provide activities for children and young people, computer training for all ages, and regular social groups. For some older people, visiting one of the social groups is the only time in the week when they leave the house. Southampton Sight thinks it is vital to provide timely information and support for people as they are diagnosed with an eye condition, which could lead to sight loss. Not surprisingly, people often have a number of questions about what this means for their future, and Southampton Sight is there with practical answers about how to build and maintain independence and confidence. They say, "To deliver these services, we are reliant on a small group of dedicated staff and a large group of committed volunteers. Although we are careful about cost, the organisation needs about £4,000 per week to keep going. Can you help? £15 pays for a blind or partially sighted older person to attend a social activity. £36 pays for a blind or partially sighted person to have a personal advice session." Sponsorship. Southampton Sight is looking for sponsorship from local business. Please ring and talk to them if you are interested. Volunteering. We currently have vacancies for volunteer drivers and store collectors. We're also keen to talk to anyone who wishes to raise funds via sponsored runs, etc. And they also have vacancies for trustees who have experience in the legal field and in human resources. The telephone number of Southampton Sight is 023 8076 9882, and there is also a website, Southampton Sight, all one word, lowercase letters, .co.uk.
Trees spruced up and ready for Christmas. With less than a week to go before the big day, workers at a plantation near Winchester will be looking forward to a well-earned rest. They have been busy felling tens of thousands of trees in time for the festive season. Plantation manager Robert Durrant was among many to put on his hard hat and ear protectors as he set about the trees with a chainsaw. 12 field workers spent a week chopping down the trees, which stand between 3 and 26 foot tall. Another dozen yard workers at Burcott Farm near Winchester bundled them up and shipped them to retailers around the country. A typical 6 foot tree from the farm will sell in the shops for £50. Around 850,000 trees are grown on the 320-acre site at any one time, with 85,000 trees planted and cut down each year. They are harvested between 6 and 9 years after planting, depending on how quickly they grow. The fields, which contain Nordman fir and Norway spruce trees, are left fallow in the 10th year. Trees are only cut to order, and the biggest, a 26-foot Nordman fir, stands proudly in Winchester city centre. And there's a picture of Robert Durrant, who's the plantation manager, and Iwona Nowak, who's a plantation technician, checking the quantity and height of the freshly cut Christmas trees.
Leper Hospital still giving up its secrets. Nearly 90 Winchester Archaeological Research Group members and guests gathered at the Hampshire Record Office in Winchester last week to hear Dr. Katie Tucker talk about the evidence of leprosy in the skeletons excavated at St. Mary Magdalene near Maughan Hill. This site has been excavated for 5 years by the University of Winchester, and the remains of the pre-conquest leper hospital have given up many of its secrets. The majority of the skeletons found have shown evidence of leprosy, which was at its worst in this country between the 11th and 14th centuries. Several graves had been painstakingly dug out of the chalk, not an easy task, and according to carbon dating, dated from the late 10th century onwards. All the dead had been buried with great care, and each had its own grave. Some were at slightly different angles, and many had been dug into by subsequent burials. One skeleton must have gone on a pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela in northern Spain, as he still wore his scallop shell when he was buried. These cemeteries have been uncovered to the north and the south of the main hospital site, but the team, led by Dr. Simon Roffey, who hopes to continue for several years yet and expects to find many more burials, particularly those of the members of the hospital who did not have leprosy. As a local speaker, Dr. Tucker was warmly welcomed and had to answer many erudite questions after her talk. WARG, the Society for Winchester Archaeology and Local History, meets on the second Monday of the month. Non-members are welcome for a charge of £3 per head to include the refreshments. Call Secretary Julia Sanderson on 01962 867 490 or visit www.warg.org.uk.
Adding value to lives. Countess Mountbatten House is a special place where patients with life-limiting illnesses, both in the hospice and in the community, are cared for by teams who deliver over and above. The hospice serves a community in excess of 720,000 people, and its catchment spans 460 square miles. Support from the local community and business is essential to ensure that the charity can continue to add value to the lives of patients and their families at a very precious time. Whilst there may not be a cure, the NHS deliver the best in medical care, with the charity providing those little and not so little extras to help make someone's stay in the hospice the best experience possible, from the all-important drinks trolley that comes round twice daily to newspapers, complimentary therapies, beds for overnight visitors, many last requests, beautiful gardens, pain-relieving mattresses, plus tea and biscuit for families and friends. The charity also supports the families and carers throughout the illness and subsequent loss. Countess Mountbatten's aim is to raise the profile of the charity and in turn raise much-needed support through community, ambassadors, media and corporate partners.
Villagers jubilant as firm's bid refused. Villagers are celebrating after councillors refused permission for a firm supplying wood chipping equipment to operate on an agricultural site. Up Somborne-based Redwood UK's retrospective application for the change of use of a redundant agricultural building at Forest Extra in the village was unanimously rejected by Test Valley's Southern Area Planning Committee last Tuesday. Councillors said the application was more suited to an industrial site in Andover or Romsey. Villagers in the Somborns and nearby Ashley opposed Redwood's plans, and around 40 residents were at the meeting. Councillors agreed with their views that the narrow lanes around the site were totally unsuited to large lorries coming in and out of the site. The Browning family, who run the business, had agreed to a lorry routing scheme which would have banned HGVs from using Strawberry Lane, the most populated area of Up Somborne, to access Redwood's premises. However, councillors voiced serious concerns about the potential for accidents involving pedestrians using the lanes and damage to verges. It is reported that there are an average of 218 vehicle movements to and from Redwood on weekdays. But Borough Highways Officer Ray Albrough told the meeting that in the last 5 years, no injury accidents had been reported on approach roads to the development. However, he said that if planning permission was granted, a lorry route with weight and width restrictions and passing places could be imposed. King Somborne and Michelmersh ward member Tony Ward said, "I have serious concerns about this application, particularly its size and the impacts for growth. It started small, but now it's a really big wood chipper repair business. This operation is completely in the wrong place and should be refused because a need has not been demonstrated in the countryside." Councillor Clive Collier, who represents Romsey Abbey Ward, suggested the applicant should consider moving to vacant premises on industrial sites in Romsey. More than 200 people living in the area signed a petition against the development. Before the debate, King Somborne's Parish Council Chairman, Richard Harwood, and members of the public addressed the committee with their concerns. Protesters were jubilant at the decision. Alec Kay, who spoke on behalf of Little Somborne, Ashley and Up Somborne residents, said, "This is fantastic. There's been a lot of hard work done to stop it. Common sense has prevailed." Up Somborne's Sarah Lytton said, "This is a fabulous result. We had serious concerns about safety on roads through the village, and hopefully this refusal decision will reduce traffic as a result." Nobody from Redwood UK was available to comment. And there's a picture of villagers from the Somborns gathered about the signposts.
Diamond necklace breaks record. A diamond necklace that has not seen the light of day for over 40 years has become the most expensive diamond necklace to be sold at auction outside London. It was consigned to Duke's Auctioneers of Dorset from a distinguished private collection. It remained in a safe until recently, when it was worn during the auction viewing for the first time since the 1960s. It sold for £231,800. Dating to the 1860s, the necklace is set with 53 cushion-cut diamonds, which total in excess of 64 carats. Amy Brennan, jewellery valuer at Duke's, described the stunning find. "The largest diamond is 5 carats, approximately the same size as a lady's ring fingernail, with the rest of the diamonds graduating along the neckline. These necklaces were known as rivières. The idea of a literal river of diamonds gracing the wearer's neck was incredibly seductive to the Victorians. Rivières were common at this time, but to find such a large one in original condition with an additional pendant drop is extremely exciting. The quality of the piece and the exceptional colour and clarity of the diamonds attracted interest from buyers and private collectors across the world. Each mount for each diamond is engraved with the old weight of the diamond in grains instead of carats, says Amy. This is how diamonds were measured in the 19th century, and it illustrates how important the goldsmith thought the stones were. It is highly unusual to see this engraving, and I think this gave buyers the confidence to bid strongly. It was certainly not a piece to be missed. The necklace was fought over by three telephone bidders and a lady in the room, with the hammer falling at £190,000, $231,800, including buyer's premium, to an anonymous bidder. This makes the piece the most expensive diamond necklace to be sold outside London. It breaks the current house record for a piece of jewellery at Duke's by more than £100,000. In 2010, the auction house sold an emerald turban brooch designed by Paul Tribe for over £84,000. And the article is illustrated by a very attractive young lady wearing the diamond ring necklace in question.
And now we have Westminster Diary by Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. I'm looking forward to a break and some unbroken family time this Christmas. It's been a really busy year for me, and I must confess I haven't felt even a little bit Christmassy until this week when our two took to the stage in the traditional nativity heart melt. Emily was an angel, while William was a very cute shepherd. I'm not sure Christmas ever truly comes to Westminster, although I did see Ed Balls voting in full Santa suit last week, but the Chancellor's autumn statement did its best. Generally speaking, I welcomed what he had to say because there's good news for people in our area. Positive moves on business rates with real help for the high street, energy bills down, fuel duty frozen again, and crucially for us, some rail fare increases frozen. This is all welcome support, but as the Chancellor said in the Commons, the job is far from done. I maintain that we're only able to help the people I represent, because we have taken difficult decisions to control spending. We are building a responsible recovery, but we need to keep creating jobs, because in my book, being in work is the best way to higher living standards. One of the great privileges of my job is being able to use my position to bring people together quickly when a local issue rears its head. That happened the other day in Hiltingbury, where a run of petty but extremely antisocial behaviour has been taking place at the recreation ground. Last Friday, I pulled together police, local councillors and community representatives to see if we can nip this in the bud. I hope those attending found it a useful session and we can move forward with the agreed plan. Readers will remember my recent well-attended Ask South West Trains public meeting in Winchester. One of the issues raised was around the safety of travellers, especially women, arriving back late at night, and I've wasted no time in following that up. It was therefore useful to welcome the Rail Minister, Stephen Hammond MP, to the city last week to see for himself the investment taking place at our main station and to bring him into discussions around public safety. Things are looking positive, and I'm very hopeful we can, for instance, complete some improvement works to improve pedestrian and cyclist safety on the access route from the car park out onto the Andover Road. Finally, I grew up with a football at my feet, so rugby was never my game, but I was excited to visit Winchester Rugby Club recently to meet the team, and I wasn't disappointed. New chairman Tom Shuey really has the club frying, and it was useful to hear of future plans and the thriving minis section, which bodes well. We also took the chance to discuss the impact any change at River Park would have on the club, which I have fed into the City Council. As this is my last column of the year, may I wish all Hampshire Chronicle readers a peaceful Christmas and a successful New Year.
Parishioners show how to live more sustainable lives. Members of a Hampshire parish have received a top award for changing the way they live. Parishioners at Hampshire Downs Catholic Parish, comprising the churches of St Gregory the Great in Alresford, St Thomas More in Stockbridge, and St Peter and St Stephen in Winchester, have gone back to basics to live more simply and sustainably. And as a result of 2 years' hard work, they have been presented with the Live Simply Award, a national prize recognising the way a parish makes a difference in its community and the world. Mike Slynn, member of the Parish Justice and Peace Group and coordinator of the Live Simply project, said, "As Christians, we felt it was very important to raise awareness in the parish about ways in which we can live more sustainably and in solidarity with the poor. Registering for the Live Simply Award and getting the parish involved felt like the perfect way to go about it. To apply for the award, the parish took on 10 substantial actions under the headings of Living Simply, Living Sustainably, and Living in Solidarity with People in Poverty. Parishioners also had to show that the actions they were putting in place were sustainable. A major boost for the initiative came with the construction of the new Parish Pastoral Centre in 2011-12, which benefits from a ground source heat pump which has very low energy usage. Mr. Slynn added, "The parish encouraged parishioners to join in activities such as living simply on Fridays, recycling household items, setting up a car share scheme to get to church, and supporting the parish's covenant with the poor, providing funds for charitable projects in the UK and overseas." The Live Simply Award was developed in partnership with the Catholic aid agency CAFOD, to offer support and encouragement to communities to put their faith into action. Laura Bigoni, CAFOD diocesan officer for the Winchester area, praised the dedication of parishioners. She said, "We are absolutely delighted that Hampshire Downs is the third parish in our diocese to receive the Live Simply Award. We hope this will set an example that more and more parishes will be willing to follow."
Food Group's latest award. Leading food group Hampshire Fair has been honoured for a fourth time at the Beautiful South Awards, receiving an award in the Tourism Event of the Year category. This year's Silver Award will be added to the two Gold Awards and the Highly Commended received in previous years. The Beautiful South Awards have been running for more than 20 years and celebrate the very best of the South East has to offer for all types of tourism. The county's annual food festival in July is organised by Hampshire Fair to showcase local food and farming. The award was presented for the 2012 festival, which featured more than 80 events, attracting 295,000 visitors. Mike Wright, chairman of Hampshire Fair, said, "Being shortlisted for the fourth time is evidence of the sustainability of the festival and how it continues to evolve year on year."
Interactive Sensory Room aims to help disabled. A new community project in Eastleigh has launched a multi-sensory room. The project, called Sensory for All, uses new technology in which projected images respond to gestures and movement, enabling users to interact and engage with what they're seeing. The room is available for everyone, of all ages, but organisers hope it will be of particular benefit to those with disabilities. The room will also include soft seating and floor pads, a large bubble tube, mirrors, a sensory projector, colour-changing lighting, and a multimedia projection system, much of which can be controlled by the users themselves. The project is made possible thanks to a £20,000 grant from Hampshire County Council. The room can be booked for exclusive use by individuals, families, or groups, or you can just turn up for pay and play sessions. The room is at the Pavilion on the Park, and staff there are now appealing for donations of any sensory items in good condition. Contact Daisy Brookman on 02380 612 710 and find out more.
And that concludes the extract for this week and also for the ear. Thank you to our editors, Christine Aston and Fredina Hearn. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Claire Porter.
Bye, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you all.
Robin Freeman.
Goodbye and the season's greetings to you all.
And Cherry Tuff.
Bye. Have a lovely Christmas and a healthy 2014.
And from me, Roy Faithless, goodbye for now and indeed for 2013. Thanks for listening over the past year and we hope you enjoy the festive 2 weeks ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in a yellow wallet together with a laminated card when you finish listening. You'll receive the next edition of the Talking Newspaper in the week beginning the 4th of January 2014. Thank you again. And have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.